morning, New Mexico, and welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Bacon Company on Cordova Road and streaming on the web at ksfr.org. We're also podcasting at the website santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can hear the show anytime you want, thanks to Santa Fe's Dotfoil Computer Services. And you can also subscribe to the show on iTunes.
You sound so sultry this morning.
I think it's just the end of a head cold.
Oh, well, that's disappointing.
But let's call it sultriness.
It's very sultry.
Dal Dierman joins me, and he's the general manager of KSFR, Santa Fe Public Radio, and we are in the second week of our fun drive.
And having a heck of a time.
Are we?
Yes, we are. We've had a terrific morning. We had a great week last week. We're going to get this done this week, no question about it. The only question is which day this week, and I'm shooting for late Wednesday, but we'll see. I also wanted to mention before you get into your main subject today, MC, all the people who have in the last few days because I check all the comments on the pledge forms when people call in and pledge, who've mentioned how much they appreciate you, and I've just made a quick list here of those who are not in Santa Fe. Because, of course, Santa Fe loves you.
Ah, yes, thank
you.
Well,
now we can officially add Rio Rancho, Corrales, El Rito, Red River, and, believe it or not because you wouldn't believe you were popular there, but believe it or not, you can hear us there, Truth or Consequences.
Really?
Yep.
That's
mm-hmm.
fantastic. And this is all our 101.1 FM signal, which is reaching far further than the 90.7 signal, and we're very happy about it.
That's a fact.
It's also true that that upgrade cost us money, which is why one of the reasons why we're coming to you, our listeners, to ask you to call and make a pledge to KSFR. If you haven't already, the number is 428-1393.
And, you know, even I have to say, even if you have already, because I was here yesterday afternoon, as you know, and we had somebody call who was making their third pledge of this pledge drive.
Is that right?
And that is not unusual. And then we had somebody call from Albuquerque a couple of days before that who had discovered 101.1, discovered it 3 days before the start of the pledge drive, and liked KSFR so much, he made a pledge. He's known us for 3 days.
Well, if you have known us for 3 days or more, there are some people who have known us for years, who've been listening to this show for years. I've been doing it for 4.5 years with great pleasure and great effort, and I'm very, very happy to be here every morning bringing you the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. And for those who are listening and who actually like what you listen to, we ask so little of you, but what we do ask is twice a year for you to go to your telephone or to your computer and make a pledge to KSFR in the name of this show, in the name of public radio, in the name of whatever it is that you like about this station.
In the name of dog.
In the name of dog.
I can't believe I'm buying into this.
I cannot believe that just came out of your mouth,
Dal
Dierman.
No, it never will again.
Dal Dierman is somebody to whom you do not bring dogs. But 428-1393 is the number. If you're calling from out of the local calling area, it's 505. Toll-free 866-907-5737, 866-907-5737.
It is great to be here with you this morning. I am just thrilled. It's a beautiful day.
It is indeed.
And the trees are starting to bloom, the fruit trees are. Here at the community college where KSFR is based, I see a lot of buds in the courtyard. It is just a great time to be alive.
It is a great time to be alive, and it's a great time to express your joy in being alive by making a contribution to KSFR, 428-1393. We're going to hear today an interview, which I recorded maybe a little over a week ago, with the author Dagoberto Gilb, who is an author whose work I've admired for a long time, a Chicano writer from the Southwest, grew up in L.A., I think lived in Texas for quite a long time, and he has written a new book called The Flowers, which I read. Now, I read quite a bit for this show, as you know.
And you always read the book.
And my rule for fiction at this point is if I can't get through the first chapter, I'm not going to do the interview. So people have to send me their books in advance, which they do, and I read the first chapter, and if it's unbearable, we're not doing the interview.
This is her German-Sicilian heritage.
Whatever that means. But this
means you're uncompromising.
Well, I don't know about that, but I'll tell you.
I meant it in a good way.
Well, thank you, Dal. But this book, I opened it up, and I read the first chapter, and I read the second chapter, and I read the third chapter, and at 5 a.m. the next day, I closed the book. It's terrific. We're going to hear an interview, and if you would like a copy of this book, The Flowers by Dagoberto Gil, he's one of those writers who gets better with every book that he writes, and that's not true of everybody. We can think of authors who had a tremendous debut and then kind of declined after that. This fellow is really, I think, just the opposite. 428-1393 is the number where you can get a copy of this book for a contribution of $85. I think we have only five copies, so the first five people who call get a copy of the book. There's also many other things that you can get as our way of saying thank you for your contribution to KSFR, so you don't go away empty-handed. All sorts of KSFR travel mugs and clothing and baseball caps and things like that. Also, for a contribution of $35, you can actually get the unabridged copy of this interview, which we're playing an abridged version of it today for the purposes of our fun drive.
Of our having fun talking together.
Yes, but we're going to go into the interview in just a second. 428-1393 is the number, but we really do need, just simply to keep the lights on, your contribution. This is truly, truly listener-supported public radio, and we ask you to give from your heart. We ask you to give from your wallet, but above all, from your heart. If you love this station, if you like this show, if you love this show, please call now and make a contribution, 428-1393. And we're going to go now to our interview with Dagoberto Gil. I'd like to welcome Dagoberto Gilb. He is an author whose latest book is The Flowers, published by Grove Press. Welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe.
Thanks very much for inviting me. I appreciate it.
So the main character of your novel is a 15-year-old Chicano boy named Sonny, whose mother remarries this guy who's basically a redneck alcoholic who runs a small apartment complex in Los Angeles. Tell us how you developed this very appealing character of Sonny.
You know, it's always funny when I get this. It's like, I know that the world is full of, like, inventing the new writing world. Everybody invents from, they sit in a room and, you know, invent little worlds like it's Super Mario Brothers. Whereas in my case, things sort of, like, the only way I can invent is sort of that, when it's sort of throbbing and I invent things around the throbbing physical contact I've had. And so all this to say that I didn't create them in the sense that, people create sort of like a cartoon character. It's from my own life to the degree that, you know, I lived in an apartment complex and I had a stepfather like that. And my mother was she married a man similar to this and like that. Sort of the traditional way that fiction has been written over the years where, you know, it didn't used to be so odd to do that.
So is Sonny somebody who you feel like is kind of your 15-year-old self?
Well, I think whenever a writer writes, that everybody is his own self.
Right.
And yes, I know his experience very well. It's not my experience. My experience sort of like ins and outs. There's various ins and outs of it that are close to my experience. But when you're writing fiction, even the, quote, actual factual things that you could point to aren't really what happened. You know, there's, for instance, there's a pervert in the story who, you know, in some sense I've obsessed, in my own life, I obsessed over a guy that was following me when I was young. And so I got my revenge on him, a guy that was just, you know, bothering me when I was a young guy, like following me in a car. And I sort of took it out on him. It's not him. I had no experience like anything like Sonny does in the book. There's nothing even similar, except, yeah, I could say, yeah, there was this sick dude that was like pursuing me. But does that mean it's autobiographical? No, it doesn't at all. It's not at all what happened to me, except that the experience happened to me, and that's what I mean. So an apartment complex, which when you're from California and, you know, a lot of places now, but cities and usually in the West, these apartment complexes become very ordinary for all of us, and it is the way we live now.
One thing that is really well drawn and well written in this novel is the tremendous sensitivity that young people have, that this particular character has, to the nonverbal signals of everybody around him. He can detect phoniness or any kind of deception a mile away, and likewise he knows who's leveling with him as well. And I was thinking about, you know, what does it take to get into this adolescent headspace? Is that something that we lose as adults?
Well, I worked real hard to get the voice, you know, to work on a voice that was both, you know, from the past and could be translated as current too, you know. So you know, that was the effort that I put the most work into when I was working on this book. And it's the thing, ironically, that's caused it the most grief in terms of getting published. Everybody thought I was the character, and I didn't use artifice. But I don't really think he is 15 in the slightest. So it's hard for me to sort of, I think he's much more like any adult. We all have that character, or at least men. I think actually women can be women at 14. In some sense, they begin women issues at around that time. But it's all that time when we become adult and we're kind of right at the crossroads of adult and childhood. And that's what I was dealing with. So a lot of the issues in the book aren't even close to being youthful, really. They're just sort of innocent.
Yeah. What do you mean when you say you've gotten grief for that voice that you worked hard on? I love the voice of this character.
Well, it's funny because, you know, when you send to New York, New York sees this sort of ignorant, funny guy that doesn't speak in appropriate English or whatever the hell they think when they read it, when they read it, and mostly just there. And it's a voice they're not used to hearing, especially since it's a Mexican-American, I think. They have no familiarity with the voice, and so they thought it was me writing in my normal, in my normal voice, and in my normal compositional way, as if I don't know the rules of speech. I was capturing a dialect, and they weren't thinking it was a dialect. They thought it was just how my bad English was.
Oh my goodness! That's shocking.
I mean, it was pretty surprising to me, particularly. It's not surprising. Well, stepping back, in the first place, it's not surprising to me to the extent that I've always gotten it. I have like now 25 years of experience, and I have been getting these kinds of reactions, you know, from the beginning. When you're a younger, you know, particularly younger writer, it's something you sort of, you know, when they're telling you that, you know, you need to do this, and, you know, if you write harder, work harder, this will happen and that happened. What I didn't realize is sort of the form of discussing, well, it's the form that racism comes in toward us. It's a sort of patronizing that if you work harder and you work on your English skills, you'll get better. Now, it shocked me that after 25 years and all my, you know, what would seem to be a credibility, that I was still getting this from the literary establishment. And it's not the establishment as sort of like hoity-toities necessarily, although there's maybe that. But it's also simply that they are not aware of the American West and the Southwest and Mexican Americans. They don't have any clue. And so they immediately assume whenever it's not in their norm, that it's something like almost retarded or a little lesser. And so the fact that even though I have all this other, this history as a writer, I was still getting treated because this character's voice, I would still hear reactions from people like, well, you know, I don't know. And it was, you know, the subtext was that this isn't mature enough for us, this guy's voice. And anybody that really actually read the story would know immediately that this is not about a young, you know, is not young in the sense of what they are thinking.
No,
it's
I mean, it's
patronizing way they're you know, leading it.
It's the book is incredibly well observed. I read every single word of it, and I really savored it. I read it really slowly. I was trying to read it fast, but I couldn't because the way that you captured the voice of this character was really, really skillful. It reminded me, frankly, of Huckleberry Finn, with the consistent voice that it was written in, the young man's independence, living by his wits, his observation of race relations and things like that. Did you think about Huck Finn when you were writing it?
Well, I first have to just compliment you on your high intelligence. But no. I mean, I know the book. I know Huck Finn, but no, not at all. To be honest with you, it's just as funny because I've been having, the book's been out a while, and I just suddenly realized that he's a 15-year-old in some sense that it hadn't even been in my mind. I didn't hear him as a 15-year-old exactly. It's I was just capturing a voice and a character, and I guess it just sort of has been sort of my own surprise and my own stupidity probably to not realize that I was writing as a 15-year-old when I was just trying to capture this young innocent Chicano voice. And I just didn't realize that, but I have to tell you, I truly admire that voice. And the voice of Huck Finn, but also Richard Wright, even his in Black Boy, he's a young guy and things like that. I do admire those books. I realized that, that's where my, I have an admiration for that kind of book, but I didn't realize I was doing that in the slightest. I truly saw him as a young adult, and I don't even mean young adult in that YA way. I'm just
right.
Finding myself at a loss for language. I just saw him as a young guy and didn't for a second think he was, quote, 15, unquote.
You're listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe, ladies and gentlemen. And we are listening to an interview with Dagoberto Gilb that I recorded quite recently. It's about his new book, The Flowers, which you can get a copy of for a contribution to KSFR. 428-1393 is the number, 428-1393. And let's do a little check-in in the control room and see how things are going. Dal Dierman.
Things are going nicely. I don't have a list of thank yous right this second. Maybe I will if you can talk for a
minute. But are the phones ringing?
The phones are... Oh, now I do. Yes, I do.
428-1393. Keep those phones ringing.
Whoa.
Yes.
Friend of yours. Lori Lieberman.
Lori,
thank you so much for
calling in this
morning. We love you.
We love her.
Alice Pasquale.
Even though she's a special cat advocate.
Well, that's why I love her.
Yes. Go ahead.
Alice Pasqualetti. Alice, thank you so much for calling. Robert Marshall. Robert, thank you very much. The trouble with getting this on the fly is people write with their feet, apparently.
428-1393. While Dal deciphers.
No, I'm not done. I'm not
done.
The
handwriting of our wonderful volunteers in the pledge room. Yes, keep going.
Diana Taylor. Diana,
thank you, Diana.
So much. And Yolanda Nava. Yolanda.
Thank you, Yolanda.
Thanks, you guys. Thanks so much for helping us out with this. We are well along. We're not two-thirds of the way yet, but we're more than half of the way to our $126,000 goal for this fund drive. And I'm feeling better and better all the time. We'll have it done before the weekend.
428-1393 is the way that we do that. And when people listen to the show and when they call and pledge, I did a calculation. People accuse me of doing the math, but it's true. If I did a calculation that if every single person listening to this show were to call now and make a pledge within their means, and that takes into account the demographics of the city of Santa Fe, the pledge drive would be over by the end of this program.
That's true.
Now, we may not have enough callers in there to take all your calls, but we would like to get those phones ringing off the hook.
We want to make these people crazy.
Well, we do want to make
the pledge phone people crazy.
But we also just simply want to stay on the air. It's quite a practical consideration. If you think about what it takes to keep a radio station on the air in a non-commercial format, well, we can't do commercials. And so what do? We turn to our listeners for contributions. Our listeners say that they love us, but we need you to prove that you love us. And the way that you prove your true love is by calling 428-1393 or from out of area 1-866-907-5737. It takes so little effort and it takes so little money. We don't care how much the contribution is at all. We truly ask everybody to give within their means, whatever your means are. Sometimes I think if you could calculate, for example, whatever job you're in, whether it be a low-wage job or whether it be a very high-wage job, 2 or 3 hours of your time, whatever it is you get paid per hour, whether you're an architect or an attorney or whether you're working at Starbucks or whether you're working at Trader Joe's or any place in Santa Fe, whatever that is, calculate a couple of hours of your time and see what you think about that to make a contribution to KSFR 4281393.
And you know, as much as we appreciate sizable contributions, that isn't the way we gauge the success of a given fund drive. What's really important to me is the number of people who actually call and participate. It's about how many individuals care about preserving public radio in northern New Mexico, not how much.
That's so true, and I love it when there's a thank you list that's very long. And if people make a contribution of $10, some people say, oh, why should I even bother making... It's just standing up and being counted. All those $10 contributions truly add up. If all of our listeners gave that amount, the pledge drive would be over, in fact. 428-1393.
Another thank you. Ro King. Thank you so much, Ro, for calling and helping us get there.
428-1393. Richard Block, who was here for many years helping us with the pledge drive, often compared the pledge drive to a potluck dinner to which everybody brought one course. And I, not being a very good cook, often tend to bring... I'm not a very good cook, Dal, you know. But, you know...
No, I don't know.
Well, you don't know.
You never invite me over.
For those who have come to my house, I'm an adequate cook, but cooking is not my thing. Let's put it that way. I'd rather stay up all night reading a book than plan a meal and cook it. So what I bring to a potluck dinner is usually tropical juice and fizzy
donuts.
Water. Sometimes chips and guacamole, that kind of thing. Whatever it is that you can bring, it doesn't matter. But there's another food metaphor that I was thinking about and have been thinking about in connection with the KSFR Fun Drive, and that is... Think about what you are willing to spend per week just going out to dinner. Now, again, some people might spend hundreds of dollars in a particular week going out to dinner. Some people might spend $10, $15, or $20 going out to dinner. But if you're willing to spend that on dinner and able to spend that, think about what it would take to just make that contribution to the KSFR Fund Drive, 428-1393.
Just one night out of whatever number of nights you go out to dinner, just open a can of sardines at home.
Or make a nice dinner at home with whatever friends or companions or family that you've got around. And please do make a contribution to KSFR. We're going to go back to our interview now with Dagoberto Gilb. And one more time, the toll-free number is toll-free area code 866-907-5737. That's 907-KSFR. Let us hear from you during this segment, and then afterwards we will be glad to read your name on the air to say thank you, or not if you prefer to remain anonymous. 428-1393. Let's go back now to Dagoberto Gilb.
One theme I wanted to talk to you about was you notice while reading it that Sonny and the other young people in the book have been raised without really any connection to wild nature. There's this great line. He's talking about his new stepfather's furniture, and he says, I don't think I'd ever seen so much wood, even in a picture of a forest, which is so great. And because he's never seen a forest, it's just a picture
right.
of a forest. But he has this great, rich, imaginative inner life, and it's such an interesting picture of just working with whatever you've got.
Again, you're such an insightful, great reader.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. It's totally an urban. It's urban. It's an urban person and a young urban man. The innocence of being urban, is being completely naive to the outer world. And it is like what a huge percentage of the population lives like. They really don't know nature. And so a lot of these discussions that you would have about nature and the outside world is really just viewed through television and things like that. They really have no clue. And in that respect, I guess I'm as guilty of that, having grown up in urban Los Angeles myself. You know, I never even crossed my mind that I wasn't, where I was, as anybody. You don't know where you are until you step away from where you've been. And then you see where you grew up, and you had no idea. I always, in some sense, like Sonny, you know, I can remember places in Los Angeles near railroad tracks where it seemed like the wilderness completely to me. And, you know, the fact is it was only like, you know, maybe it was 100 feet wide around the tracks, 50 feet on either side, and on, you know, on sort of like sloped, like almost cliff-like slopes. And you took that as sort of like being in a jungle or in a cowboy movie out there. It was just the only for like 5 minutes a day would you encounter that space.
And the character is so resourceful, not just with what he's able to do, but also just with his imagination. You know, given what he's got, you know, given the really lack of parental attention and lack of attention from teachers in his school, and really, you know, any kind of really attentive adults, and lack of nature and lack of all sorts of things, he still is a great kid, and he does so much with what he has. And I noticed that color is used to express emotional experience. It was really vivid, and I was wondering if you could talk about that.
You know, it's funny, a close friend of mine called me just a couple days ago to talk about this. You know, it's called synesthesia.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people that see colors when they eat or have certain experiences, they see colors. Sexual experiences, they'll see colors and shapes and things like this. Now, I mean, she insists that she has this incredible wealth of synesthesiac or whatever experiences. And I guess I'd have some, but I think you could say it's that. But yes, the thing I did in the novel was use that as his only source of what otherwise is pretty colorless in the world that he lives in. And it was willful.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really interesting. The another theme in the book is kind of the disintegration of the links to Mexico and to the Spanish language. And even the name of the book, The Flowers, is about the apartment complex called The Flower or The Flowers or Los Flores instead of Las Flores.
Right. Well, yeah. And to that extent, it's like what happens to a Mexican-American kid who grows up in a culture where sort of there's this admiration, or I don't even know if that's not the right word, admiration, but sort of the allure of the Spanish or the Mexican culture, even though they have nothing to do with it, and so they don't even know the language, and so they'll, you know, use the language to name a street or something, or a building in this case, and misuse it, thinking that flowers being flores and not really looking up, you know, what the appropriate article for it is.
Right.
So instead of Las Flores, they named the building Los Flores. And a lot of that disconnect with something significantly that's more important is throughout the book, that same disconnection. And, of course, the Mexican-American community is very much disconnected to its roots in Mexico and in some sense nostalgic sometimes and sometimes you know, less nostalgic about what Mexico is, but the disconnection is, of course, what he has and what he reflects, and really reflects a huge part of the community. To know that they're supposedly part of it, but to be so far away from it, it's as distant as nature is.
And then he's very drawn to a young woman who's Mexican and who really is Mexican and is from Mexico and speaks Spanish and is very rooted in Mexico. And her name is Nika, but she has lots of different names and she longs for an American name. And it's a very tender relationship between the two characters.
Right. Again, it's that level of sort of sweetness that maybe that could be called young. I just call it, we all have that in us. And it just is more noticeable when you're young. But, yeah, sort of a loss and, you know, appreciation of this person is just thrown into this, into that urban wilderness, and it's just completely inappropriate for it. And is scared. In some sense, in her case, she's stuck in a little small space by sort of like, I guess you could almost call them abusive parents, at least just unaware parents. But everybody in the novel has the same basic selfish interest. Everybody's into their own selfish self-interest. And so it's she's no different, but she's just, she's the utter form of innocence that you could be with no responsibility and only doing good and not knowing anything, you know, not being responsible for what's going on around her. And even as she's not responsible, her behavior is pretty good.
Now, while all this is going on, Sonny is adding a language, which is so, it's again, it's very endearing. He decides that he wants to go to Notre Dame, but he doesn't mean the college. He means the church, Notre Dame in France, and he wants to learn French. And French, the French language, becomes this sort of refuge for him.
Right. Yeah, no, it's, I love that. I mean, you know, there's several things going on with the French. It's his form of playfulness. It's how he smiles through this otherwise pretty bleak-looking world. It makes him laugh, and it makes him, you know, it's his way of sarcasm. It's all these things that make him feel, you know, give him sort of a spirit. But at the same time, he's doing that. For me, it's also a way of playing, too, as the writer. It's my little, to use the French, bête homage to Jean Genet.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Our Lady of the Flowers. I sort of like have indebtedness to these kind of writers that broke rules and literary rules. And so in a certain sense, I'm, you know, willfully trying to break some rules, because the cliche about Mexican-American writers is it's always about Spanish and it's always about this other stuff. And I was trying to sort of assert something else about what we are able to do. We can do other things, too, besides be locked down by these identity politics. But with that, I'm also being playful and playing with the idea that I like Jean Genet, who was a, you know, pretty explicit gay writer who was in prison as a thief. And so in some sense, Sonny is a little bit like that. So that little play I'm doing in the book is about me sort of like talking about, hey, I like Jean Genet, and that's why it's called The Flowers.
It's Mary Charlotte in the morning.
Are you going to compose me a jingle?
Absolutely. Yep, that's my commercial background.
You're listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. It is the KSFR Pledge Drive. It's an interview with Dagoberto Gilb, author of The Flowers, longtime fiction writer. I think I read the first book of short stories by him probably a good 10 years ago, or maybe a little bit more, and quite a wonderful writer. And I think we had a nice conversation. I really enjoyed talking to him.
Well, and a lot of people agree, too, Mary Charlotte, because we've got a number of people to thank.
Oh, good. Are there any copies of the book still available, or are they gone?
That I got to check.
Okay.
I'm not positive. But I want to thank Robin Morehouse. Robin,
thank you. Of
Clever Canine Dog Training.
Oh, goody.
Yes.
Gumdrops.
Yes. Lisa Pence, who likes Amy Goodman as well.
Yay.
Meredith Machen. Meredith.
Thank
loves,
you, Meredith.
Loves KSFR. Mary Charlotte, all of you rock. And Don Roberts. Don, thank you so much this
thank
morning
you,
as well. And I'll check on the books and be back.
Okay, 428-1393 is the number. And if you like public radio and if you like this program, we ask you to contribute to our pledge drive every year. It's non-commercial radio, Dal. What?
I'm back.
You're back.
Two copies of the book left.
Two copies of the books left.
Now, I should have said thank you to Don and Lynn Roberts.
Oh, thank you.
Like all of our programs.
Wonderful. One of the things that we are very happy about, as we've discussed on many occasions on this show, is the fact that our signal now reaches a broader area than it used to. We now reach basically from Albuquerque to Taos. And I was listening to the show when I was driving down to Albuquerque the other day, and it was great. I mean, listening to the radio.
I wondered how you were doing that.
I was asleep. You know, we're getting calls from people who are thanking us for being on the air in a much broader area. But this actually did cost us a chunk of cash, and that is one of the reasons that we have to do our pledge drive.
Well, and even more than that, it will continue to, because there are ongoing additional costs involved with being on the top of Pajarito Peak and our new transmitter and all the attendant things that go with it.
And the fact is, when you are a growing radio station, there are growing expenses. And even just simply maintaining what we have does not come for free. We simply have to pay people and pay for equipment and deal with the various expenses of running a small nonprofit business, which is what this is. And so instead of running the kind of commercials that make you crazy, I have a hard time listening to commercial radio, even though I like some radio, some commercial radio stations and the music they play and so on. I have a hard time listening to the many, many minutes of commercial airtime during each hour of programming. We don't do that. All we do is twice a year we come on for a week or two, ask you to make a contribution, and then go back to our regular programming.
But to your point, costs are going up, and so instead of the usual $100,000 goal we've had in the last several fund drives, we have a $126,000 goal this time.
That's such a funny number, Dal.
I kind of like it.
126.
That's what we need. Well, okay. We have something called a budget.
Right. I don't know too much about things like that.
It was either raise the goal or open a dog grooming business on the side.
Well, I mean, I think raising the goal is just fine, because although I would be happy to do a dog grooming business on the side, I don't want to compete with all the wonderful dog grooming businesses that already exist, like Laundromat. 4281393 is the number, 4281393.
We have excellent momentum going this hour. We've had it all morning, as a matter of fact. It's just thrilling to be on this side of the telephone and hearing from so many people who are enthusiastic supporters of KSFR programming, beginning in the morning with Amy Goodman and the news and, of course, Mary Charlotte's Radio Cafe.
Let's keep those phones ringing. We're going to go to the third and final segment of our interview with Dagoberto Gilb in just about a half a minute. 428-1393 is the number. It's nice to be on this end of things, too, drinking a hot caffeinated beverage.
Could you stop dropping those dishes?
In the Santa Fe Baking Company. It is not I who is dropping the dishes. But I will try to see what we can do about that. 428-1393, or if you're calling out of area, 1-866-907-5737. We've got two copies of the book left, The Flowers by Dagoberto Gilb. Make a contribution of $85, and that book will be sent to you. It is already sitting in Linda's office, and she will send it right out. It'll be to you probably within a couple of days. 428-1393. Let's go back to the interview.
It really is amazing. I mean, we're here in the Southwest. I've lived here for a long time. And once you've been here for a while, you notice really how much more provincial New York is, or the Northeast is, than we are, because we know what's going on in the Northeast, and they've got no idea what's going on down here.
Oh, there's absolutely no question that's true. And it's not even their fault. I mean, you can see it so well. It causes us problems. You know, as artists and writers, they go after our most commercial and cliched work, generally, and respond to it out of their own expectations of stereotypes and cliches. But it's definitely true that they're very limited and almost provincial in their outlook. It's pretty amazing, particularly about the American Southwest. I think a writer like me, who's one from the West, which is not understood well or appreciated much in our literary capital, which is an unavoidable fact, it's in New York City. So they don't care much about the West, or they don't understand it except as a tourist place. But then the American Southwest, which doubles the trouble, because the American Southwest is even more ours. It's not Los Angeles, it's not San Francisco. And then finally, the last thing is Mexican Americans, which, to top it off, we've gotten this anti-immigrant bias, and even in New York, they're not even appreciating Mexican people. So Mexican Americans being sort of the subgroup around that is sort of all around this sort of not getting it, not understanding who we are, our history, and I mean in the most minuscule ways they don't get it. And so, yeah, they just don't know. Earlier you mentioned the nature. Well, they themselves, and it's easy to see how it happens after a couple, 2-3 years living in New York City, where really the only things they pay attention to are conversations and you know, it's such a vertical life where they don't really have much nature. They have rain, they have snow, but those are just intrusions on their urban existence. So we writers from the West, we definitely have a lot to go up against.
Yeah, I mean, that contrast between a totally or primarily verbal life and a nonverbal life is really a big one. And then, you know, I mean, I think there's, even when there's a kind of appreciation of, let's say, Latino culture or literature or whatever, there's also an expectation that it's going to include, you know, curanderos and magical realism or something.
Well, that's a lot of silly stuff that my own community itself has perpetuated at some point, I'm just so tired of hearing about it that it's just so silly to me. I don't know where that's coming from, why it's coming from so much. I actually think it's not a description, but it's more prescription.
Right.
Everybody wants that to be true. It just happens to not be as true as it's been made out to be, unto the point where everybody expects everybody to be living this way and believing this way and thinking this sort of vaguely new agey way.
Right.
And then, of course, our artists ourselves, we are expected to dress up, you know, in sombreros and wear huaraches or dress like Frida Kahlo or whatever the heck,
right,
sort of to be our culture to them, which is the other thing I was trying to, you know, the fact is Jean Genet, that French writer, and that kind of literary life and that artistic life influenced me, as it does in to people in Mexico. I mean, Diego Rivera, one of the greatest artists of all time in all places, went to Europe. He lived in Paris, and he was influenced by Parisian art, so that when he came home, he was able to learn how to paint his own culture. And this is the way of all art, and all it has never been any different. But somehow, even in our own community, we've gotten so silly about this stuff that we even look for it in each other, expect it from each other. In L.A., it's the funny thing is everybody thinks that they have to have a gang life past in some sense. And,
right.
And it's all just ridiculous. It's just not true. I mean, there is that exists, but it's like expecting every white guy to have a biker past.
Right. Or to have an Ivy League past, you know.
Right, one of those, yeah. Just somehow one or the other, or you're not real.
It's interesting because the two best novels I've read in the last 6 months are this one and then Sherman Alexie's book, Flight, which is also told in the first person from the point of view of a 15-year-old boy who goes through all sorts of changes. In fact, he reincarnates into different people's bodies before he comes back. And it's another book that totally busts stereotypes about Native Americans. And it's just it's a great book. You are of German and Mexican origin, and many of us in this country at this point are mixed races and mixed cultures. And yet the kind of prejudices and animosities that you portray in this book, The Flowers, are still very much alive. What kinds of changes have you seen, and what kind of changes do you think that we're going through in this country in terms of people opening their minds culturally and racially?
Well, I am, you know, in that respect, I'm very much like an Obama to the degree that I'm of mixed heritage. The fact that I mostly grew up I didn't even grow up with my own father, so I don't really know his culture. And the fact that he was German in descent has nothing to do with my cultural upbringing. I know nothing about him or it, really, except in the most rude, in terms of work, he gave me jobs. But anyway, I really think there's this new generation and a new time, and I wish I could start over and do it again just with that, because I think it's so much more healthy. I'm hoping, I have a lot of hope, and I think that there is a change. Young people now grow up in a completely mixed society. Everybody's mixed. We're all mixed. And I think that's the great thing, the greatest subtext of this Obama campaign, whether it succeeds or not, and I do hope it succeeds, but to the degree that particularly young people are very much aware of our mixed racial cultures, mixed races and mixed cultures, and I just think it's, I'm just thrilled. I just, I want to scream for joy all the time. I, like I say, when I go to readings and they're young people, they so understand the complicatedness. And yes, the book represents what's still out there a lot, and it is what I grew up in Los Angeles in particular, being one of the most racist places on earth, comparable, I guess, only to, like, Philadelphia and maybe Chicago, where there's multi-ethnic groups, which is like Los Angeles. It's still there, but, yeah, I think people from, like, I don't even know what age group, but it's changed. You go to the schools, and it, there's no option but to change, because it has. It's just, it's this oncoming tide of difference. And I think it's just great.
What's your connection to the Spanish language? To what extent did you grow up speaking Spanish, and how comfortable is Spanish for you now compared to English?
My Spanish is good. Like every Mexican American, we always think it's terrible, and sometimes it is. And but my Spanish isn't bad. I can do it fine. I recently even did it publicly, and that was strange. And in Mexico, I never thought I would ever have the guts to speak publicly in Spanish, but I even did that. That was unique and fun, and now I want to do it more. But, you know, I grew up, my mother was Mexican and spoke Spanish. I mean, at some point she married white guys, so, you know, it just sort of stopped. And in the world that you're in, you know, you'd stop speaking Spanish. So my Spanish as a kid was probably like a 9-year-old, an 8 to 10-year-old, maybe.
Right.
Which is sort of like a lot of us. I mean, a lot of us don't really go much beyond that. The irony is that a lot of people that just assume that your Spanish is equivalent to reading like Don Quixote or something, and it's like that's just such an outrageously ridiculous idea. You have to, like, expecting kids in high school to read Shakespeare and get it.
Well, I just want to ask you one more question before we go, and that is, maybe this is a silly question, but this was one of those novels, The Flowers. When I finished it, the characters walked around with me for days afterwards, and I really thought about them. And as in many good novels, you sort of feel like these people are your friends. What's it like for you as an author once you finish the book? What do you do with these characters?
Well, I walked around with them for years. And a lot of the stuff that you're dealing with as an author is like, how are people going to, like Cindy, who I think gets a bad rap, you know, but Cindy's like a character we all, in an apartment building, an apartment complex, everybody knows who she is, but, yeah, so I...
She's the married woman who's not very happy with her husband.
Right, and, you know, she's a kid, too. She's 19. She doesn't know. She's just made a huge lot of mistakes that are mistakes of the working poor, and these are all these working poor people that are, in some level, they're almost... just being human beings, and you just one little nick in the navigation system, and you find yourself way down south instead of where you wanted to go, where you might have gone just had you not been touched at that point. You wouldn't have, like, 100 miles later been so off track. But I'm just extraordinarily grateful that you say this, because it pleases me so much. Thanks for saying that. Yeah, I couldn't be happier to hear what you just said.
Well, I want to thank you so much for being with us here on the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. Dagoberto Gilb, author of the new novel, The Flowers.
Thanks so much for letting me speak.
And you're listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe, and we're coming toward the end of our show. Dagoberto Gilb with us. Hey, did the last copy of the book get taken?
There is one copy left. One copy left.
428.
5 minutes to go.
428-1393. You can get a copy of the book, The Flowers, by Dagoberto Gilb, whose interview we were just listening to on Santa Fe Public Radio. And for that contribution, you get our undying gratitude, a wonderful book, and... what else, Dal?
The pleasure of supporting one of the most important institutions in these troubled times, The Truth Public Radio.
People talk about diversity, and diversity is kind of a buzzword, but it is something that I actually think about and what that means. And
we probably use it too often, but it really does mean something serious.
Well, what it means is that people from all corners of the community of... of Santa Fe of northern New Mexico are able to approach this public radio station and say, you know, we would like some airtime. And I listen to pretty much everybody. I can't get every single person on the air who calls me and contacts me, but we get pretty darn close. And, you know, sometimes the selection of who gets to be on the air is a little bit random. It's sort of a matter of timing. But we work with so many of the local institutions and so many local individuals, and it really is very much of an open radio station. We do not get people on the air based on what is going to be commercially successful. We get people based on the air based on what is interesting and what is of value to the community. And that's certainly what I try to do here on this show. And in return, all we ask is that every once in a while you make a contribution to this station.
And every once in a while is exactly right. It's just twice a year that we come to you and ask for your support for Santa Fe's only public radio. And one of the great things I said at the beginning of this hour, I read the comments from people who have pledged, and Mary Charlotte has specifically been named as one of the reasons why certain people listen to this radio station every day in communities ranging from Rio Rancho to Corrales to El Rito to Red River north of Taos to as far south as Truth or Consequences. I just find it remarkable that we're enlarging the family so terrifically, and that you are certainly a force behind that.
Well, thank you so much, Dal Dearman. It's coming toward the end of our show now. It's just a couple of minutes before the hour of 9 o'clock, so I'm going to sign off, but not before I ask you one more time to make a contribution in the name of the Santa Fe Radio Cafe and in the name of KSFR Public Radio, which is your link towards what's happening in Santa Fe. Somebody came up to me the other day and said, it was so wonderful. She said, you know, I really plan my time and go to so many things based on what I've heard on the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. So she's talking about theater, bookstore events, and so on. And that makes me so happy because so many connections are being made and so many people's lives are being fulfilled through the spreading of the word about all these activities that are happening. And I'm very grateful and honored to be one of the vehicles for this in town. 428-1393 is your number to make a pledge to KSFR in any amount, no matter how small or no matter how large. 428-1393 or 1-866-907-5737, 907-KSFR.
When are we having tea?
Oh, you know, here in the Santa Fe Baking Company, the tea flows all day long.
Uh-huh.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. KSFR streams live on the web at ksfr.org. You can email me at radiocafe@ksfr.org or leave a message at 428-1528. We're also podcasting at the website santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can hear the show anytime you want to listen, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services, and you can also subscribe to the show on iTunes. Thanks to Mary Lynn LeBlanc for engineering today. Thanks to everybody who is volunteering during the pledge drive and who is volunteering during the regular year of the radio on KSFR. So many wonderful, amazing volunteer producers and volunteers all over the station. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team, and after that, the colors of jazz. And thanks to you, Dal Dearman, for being a wonderful leader of this tremendous public radio station, KSFR.
Thank you. Thank you.
Make your call now, ladies and gentlemen. Hasta la vista.
Lauren Camp's up next.
All right.
Thanks, Mary Charlotte.
Ciao.